The one giant positive to being in a kid's joint like this was that no one, and I mean no one, was expecting me to be in such a place. With a baseball cap pulled down over my forehead, I could have been any other dad chasing his kids around. Vadim stood off to the side watching the proceedings, all while keeping a healthy distance away so as not to draw attention to me. Unfortunately, that strategy backfired, as my security guy was targeted by a suspicious group of moms. I could see their point. He was definitely giving off a pervy vibe standing there in the corner by himself looking out over the crowd of kids. The situation grew out of control faster than a brush fire fanned by the Santa Ana winds, and soon Vadim, an ex-Russian mercenary, was at the center of the firestorm. Moms with pitchforks closed ranks around him, demanding an explanation for his whole creeper-in-a-corner act. A pimply teenaged manager was called into action. He weighed all of 120 pounds and shivered as he got his first look at Vadim in all his Terminator glory.
"Sir, do you have a child here?"
Vadim didn't answer, nor did he even turn his head to acknowledge the guy. The rail-thin little manager reached his arm toward Vadim, possibly to lead him out of the establishment, but if he laid even one finger on my bodyguard, I was certain he'd be in a deadly chokehold in a matter of seconds. Sending Riley over to Lassen, I broke through the group and introduced myself. As I pulled my cap off, several people actually gasped.
"Guys, it's okay. He's my bodyguard. Sorry if he startled you. He was just trying to protect me."
The manager's mouth dropped open. He couldn't have been older than 19. I wondered what life skills this kid possessed to have been made manager of a Chuck E. Cheese's, or to potentially handle a situation with a real pervert in the place.
"I'd appreciate it if we could keep this quiet so I can stay here a little longer with my niece and nephew."
"Oh, yeah, okay, sure,
sorry."
"We're good then?"
"Yes."
The man-child manager turned to the mommy gang and asked,
"Are you all okay with this now?"
There was a collective head nod from the mob, and as they dissipated, I replaced my cap and grabbed Vadim's arm, dragging him with me as I went back to the kids. Only I couldn't find them. Or Lassen.
Shit, where are they?
I immediately felt a tightness in my chest. I knew better than anyone how quickly things could turn wicked. Vadim went into mercenary mode, his body taut with purpose. He scanned the play area like it was a battlefield.
"Jake!"
Sydney waved, calling out to me as she glided down the slide coming from the sky tubes. One kid, thank God.
"Where's Riley?"
I asked, still trying to make sense of his disappearance.
"In the tubes, with Lassen."
All tension dissolved as I processed the words she'd spoken. Gaping at her in surprise, I asked,
"Lassen's in the tubes?"
"Uh-huh. I think he might be stuck, though,"
Sydney said, as if a man the size of Lassen stuck in a suspended hamster house was no big deal.
"Wait, Sid, are you sure he's stuck?"
"Well, he's crying, so..."
"Lassen's crying?"
The shock of what I was hearing was causing my head to spin.
"Actually, it was more like moaning."
She proceeded to mimic the sound he was making.
"Oh God, where are they?"
She pointed up to the highest tube.
"You want me to show you?"
"Yeah, that might be a good idea."
Mistake number 5 was inviting Lassen to come along. I realized that I already mentioned this mistake, but with the current situation we found ourselves in, I feel it's worth repeating. Sydney scaled the rope walls like Spider-Man. My journey up wasn't as effortless. I wasn't that old, but damn, I felt like I was, as kids as young as 4 whizzed past me at lightning speed. How in the hell had Lassen gotten up here? Although he'd lost quite a few pounds as a result of a health scare last year, he was still a big man. It didn't take long to figure out where Lassen was. There was a human traffic jam 12 kids long. Most of them were turning around and squeezing by me to use another tunnel by the entrance. I crawled toward Lassen, who was lying on his stomach at a bend in the tubes. Riley was sitting behind him, patting him on the back. Sydney got to them first and impatiently demanded,
"Move it, big man."
"Back off,"
Lassen's growl echoed through the tubes.
"Dude, are you stuck?"
I asked, finally reaching my friend.
"No, I'm claustrophobic."
"He was crying,"
Riley offered.
"I wasn't crying, I was panicking, there's a difference." The situation was too funny not to laugh. So I did, hysterically. Sydney and Riley joined me.
"When you're done, will you call the fire department, please?"
Lassen panted.
"They're going to need the jaws of life to cut me out of here."
"You don't need rescuing. I'll help you," I said, before addressing my niece. "Sid, I want you to take Riley back through the entrance and then wait with Vadim until I come out."
"Not a chance. I don't want to miss a second of this."
"Sydney," I scolded through barely controlled laughter. "If you do what I say, and you hold Riley's hand and you stand next to Vadim until I get Lassen out, I will buy you a buttload of tickets so you can get any toy in the prize booth." Sid eyeballed me.
"Any toy?"
"That's right."
"I want the giant pastel slinky."
"Done." I was pleasantly surprised by how easily Sid caved. Damn, bribery was a legit parenting tactic. I didn't care how much that giant slinky was going to cost me. My niece's cooperation would be worth every penny.
"Okay, come on, Riley. Hold his hand the whole time, Sid. That's the deal."
"I know, I know. See you on the other side, Rockstar."
"How old are you again?" I laughed, and then turned my attention back to Lassen as the kids scooted back out and climbed down through the entrance. "Okay, I think our best bet is to have you move forward and not back."
"I'm not going anywhere. Perhaps you didn't hear me. I can't fucking move."
He spat under his breath.
"And I don't appreciate you laughing at me. This is all your fault in the first place."
"Hey, I just brought you here. You're the chump who decided to take a tour through the tubes."
"For you, Jake."
"Me?"
"You handed Riley off to me, and then the little shit took off into the tubes. I had no choice but to follow him in."
Now I felt somewhat bad for him. Nah, not really. His predicament was what America's Funniest Home Videos was made for. "Dude, I hate to say this in such crude terms, but you're like a giant butt plug. Nothing's going in or out. Kids are piling up, and it's only going to get worse. So what I need you to do is to take a deep breath and start squirming your way out." I felt a tug on my shirt.
"Excuse me, mister?"
a little voice said. I looked back to find the most adorable little golden-haired girl, no more than 4, trying to climb over me. Her pigtails bobbed as she again repeated,
"Excuse me."
"You're not going to be able to get through," I tried to explain to her. "It's best to go the other way."
"But I want to go down the slide,"
she pouted. Coming up behind her was her dad. "What's the holdup? Is he all right?" "He's just a little claustrophobic," I explained. "Give me a second, okay?"
"Is he dead, Daddy?"
the girl asked. "No, he's not dead. Hey, wait a minute. Are you Jake McAllister?" "Yeah, I am." I pushed on Lassen with all my might, but he simply tilted to the right and did not move. "No way. I mean, no way. This is crazy. What are you doing at Chuck E. Cheese's? You don't have kids, do you?" "I'm here with my niece and nephew. I can't believe this. Can I take a picture with you?" "Oh, my God," I heard Lassen complain. "I'm kind of busy right now," I explained, even though the situation seemed fairly self-explanatory. "But after I get him out, sure."
"Yeah, yeah, no problem. Can I help?"
Another child, an adult, came up behind the dad and his daughter.
"It's Jake McAllister."
He filled in the newbies. They were sufficiently impressed. A camera flashed, and then another. "Lassen, if you start inching forward, I'll buy you a pastel slinky from the prize booth."
"Shut up. I'm moving."
And much to my surprise, he had wriggled his big body past the bend and was slowly but surely slithering his way through the tubes. I crawled after him. Behind me was an ever-growing pile-up of bodies. After making another turn, I could see the slide directly ahead. "That's it, buddy. Just follow the light." Lassen didn't find me funny in the least. His panting was out of control, like a dog in some serious heat. Through the power of sheer will and terror, though, my driver mercifully arrived at the top of the slide, but instead of maneuvering his body around and taking the ramp on his ass, Lassen just inched his body forward and slid down head first like a rag doll. When he got to the bottom, Lassen oozed his exhausted body off the slide and collapsed into a heap. Sydney, still holding Riley's hand, walked over and nudged him with her shoe.
"You okay there, big man?"
I didn't hear Lassen's reply, but
By the look of surprise on Sid's face, he hadn't used a PG-13 word. After rescuing Lassen from his living hell, we allowed him to lick his wounds in a far corner, while the kids and I continued to play. True to my word, I began buying the place out of tickets so I could win my niece her coveted giant pastel slinky. Sid's bargain prize was understandably impressive. I should have known it wouldn't be your average everyday slinky. No, this one was the size of a large possum, and somehow we were going to have to make room for it in the confines of the tour bus. Riley went for a less remarkable yet still highly satisfying Nerf gun. They were happy. Less happy was Vadim, who'd been forced to call in backup when my presence at Chuck E. Cheese began making the rounds on social media. Crowds surged through the front doors as Vadim shuttled us into a private party room. While waiting for rescue, the kids and I used the leftover frozen party supplies to decorate Vadim. At 6'5" and a solid wall of human steel, the man didn't flinch once. But then, after the incident with Riley in the plane, he really didn't have room for dissent. Once safely in the car on our way back to the venue, I struggled to keep my weary eyes open. Never had I needed a nap more than today. Casey was right. I should have started off small. From this day forward, it was T-ball all the way for me.
Chapter 18. The Secret Keeper. Jake and I, along with Kyle and Kenzie, watched from a distance as Luke attempted to flirt with a woman at the open bar. It seemed to be going well at first, with him sliding in next to her and offering up some funny tidbit to break the ice. She smiled, tilting her head back. Definitely interested. This was good. Jake and Kyle clinked their beer bottles together, proudly cheering on their protege. They'd spent the last hour giving him lady-wooing tips, and once they felt their baby bird was ready to fly, Luke was kicked out of the nest. Or in this case, the luxury poolside cabana we were all sharing. It was family week on the Outlast tour. True to his word, Luke had secured time off work and was staying with us for the last 6 days of the kids' visit. Kenzie had arrived in town a couple of days before him, but I hadn't seen much of her. She and Kyle had been holed up in a hotel room. I didn't blame them one bit, as the two hadn't been together for nearly 3 months due to work responsibilities. Since moving to Los Angeles, Kenzie had become quite the social media darling after starting her own YouTube channel for small-town girls living in the big city. Her fun personality, combined with a talent for connecting with the average, everyday person, had brought her millions of subscribers and started her on a path to a whole new career. Initially, she'd planned to take her show on the road and travel with the tour, as she'd been doing since getting together with Kyle. The two had even bought their own motorhome for the road. But then, an opportunity presented itself that she couldn't pass up. Kenzie was tapped to fill in for a daytime talk show featuring a panel of women when one of the leads went on a 3-month maternity leave after the birth of her child. Although she'd appeared on a reality show, Kenzie had never done live television, so she was initially quite hesitant to accept the job. Kyle was the one who ultimately talked her into doing the show, and so began their long-distance relationship. Jake and Kyle, having the day off, joined us at the pool. The cabana was in a secured area, so Jake was able to relax without worrying about being bothered, and the kids were currently off having a blast at the hotel-provided childcare facility. This was adult time, and we were sucking up the quiet moments. My hand in Jake's, we sat side by side in our own individual lounge chairs watching the Luke show. Although there were ample chairs around them, Kyle and Kenzie had squeezed into one lounge chair, vying for butt space. "Hey," Kyle said, wriggling around. "Hands to yourself. I don't appreciate it when you manhandle me like a piece of meat, Kenzie. I have feelings."
"We'll talk about your feelings when you get your hand off my ass."
"I only have it on your ass to keep you from crushing my balls."
Jake audibly groaned before getting up and dragging another lounge chair up next to them.
"There. Problem solved."
Following Jake's entire spectacle with his eyes, Kyle turned back to Kenzie with a dopey grin on his face.
"Geez, what's his problem?"
"I know," she agreed. "As if we want to be apart.
I like squeezing in with you, sweetie.
Me too, honey pie. Oh, my God. Can you two take that cutesy shit someplace else?
Jake grumbled, but the upturn of his lips gave him away.
I can't hear what Luke's saying. He's across the pool, dipshit,
Kyle explained.
You couldn't hear him anyway.
I know, but I just want you to shut up.
Oh, damn. Look at that. A hand on the shoulder. That's a bold move,
Jake said, assessing Luke's performance.
Too bold, Kyle replied. We told him no physical contact at the first meeting. Makes him appear desperate.
But she looks interested, right? I asked, a hopeful tone to my voice. But one look at the female in question, and the way she leaned away from him, answered my question. Crap, she's not. And just as predicted, the woman got off her stool and walked away. We all let out an audible sigh. Another one bites the dust. Luke walked back with a dubious smile on his face, as if to say, "See, I told you." Obviously, Baby Bird was not yet prepared to fly, and after giving it his all, he had plummeted to the ground in a puff of feathers. Luke dropped into an open chair, sprawling out every which way. Kyle, who'd taken to being his wellness coach, asked,
"Did you ask to buy her a drink?"
"I did," Luke affirmed. "And she accepted."
"And you told her a joke to break the ice?"
"Yep. She was squirting some Germex on her hands when I walked up, so I told her hand sanitizer was a gateway drug for OCD.
"Nice," Kyle smirked.
"Good one. And did you compliment something about her?"
Just by the look on Luke's face, this was where things had gone downhill.
"I told her she had nice lips."
"Lips?"
Kyle's brows shot to the roof.
"Lips? That's just... Dude, come on, that's just creepy."
"What? You said nothing cliche like eyes or body."
"I know, but I also said to compliment her shoes or watch, something she won't take offense to."
"And I would have, had she been wearing a watch or shoes," Luke said, sounding exasperated by the interrogation.
"She was wearing a bikini. There was no safe thing to compliment. I panicked."
"Okay, maybe I was being too ambitious with you. Clearly we need to take baby steps here. Start small, and with fully dressed females."
"Like you're such a closer, Kyle," Kenzie jumped into the conversation. "I fell for you the first day we met. I followed you around with these honkin' lovesick eyes of mine, and you had no clue."
"Right, but in my defense, you smelled pretty bad."
Kenzie laughed, poking Kyle in the side.
"You're such a dick."
"I guess that just leaves us with Jake," I said. "Do you have any swagger you'd like to share with my brother?"
"Yes, Jake,"
Luke leaned in, interested in his answer.
"Please teach me how to objectify women." "The only time in my entire life that I've ever pursued a woman was your sister. Would you like to hear how I objectified her?"
"No."
Luke threw his hand up to stop Jake.
"I'd rather die alone, but thank you anyway."
"Who wants to go for ice cream?"
Luke called out. His two intended targets, Sydney and Riley, shot up and ran for the door, screaming, "I do, I do."
"Anyone?"
he joked. Again, the kids shrieked.
"If only there was more enthusiasm. Hey, do you two want to come?"
"No, thanks," I answered, eyeing Jake with interest. He'd better say no. We hadn't been alone in nearly a month, and Luke had just opened up a window of opportunity. Catching my vibe, Jake scanned me with a knowing smile before answering,
"No, I'm good."
Luke glanced between us, no doubt sensing the smoldering tension, before his face dropped in disgust.
"Ew. I'll be sure to get a double scoop."
Once the three had left, I snuck up to the door and peeked out the peephole.
"Are they gone?"
Jake asked, his voice full of hope. I turned around and, using the same high-pitched voice Luke had employed to entice the kids for ice cream, I asked,
"Who wants to objectify his wife?"
Jake shot up and ran for the door.
"I do."
Tucked against Jake's sturdy frame, his arms tight around me, I smiled at the memory of our quick and feverish lovemaking session. Before he'd even finished his sentence, I was in his arms, legs wrapped around his waist,
and was pressing impassioned kisses onto his lips. Together, we toured the room in a tangle of arms and legs before Jake dropped on top of me on the bed, and we were off. There was no foreplay or sexy banter, just the quick, frenzied sex that came from having no extended alone time together. And then it was over, and here I was, panting in his arms. I giggled at the absurdity of it all. "What?" he asked, and I could feel his smile against my cheek. "Nothing. I was just thinking that this is how sex will be once we have our own kids."
"You mean fast?" "Yeah, sorry. My bad."
"No," I said, turning around to face him. "Not fast. Frantic."
"Shit, I know. That was like a quickie on crack. I keep thinking the kids are going to walk in on us."
"And that's why I have you check the lock 3 times, I know," Jake groaned, rolling onto his back. I turned too, propping myself on an elbow just to soak in his handsome face.
"Is it weird that I'm going to miss them?" he added.
My chest burst with love for this man. Even though the whole babysitting thing had been pushed on him, he hadn't shied away. He'd gotten in there and done the job. Yes, there were times he seemed way out of his league, but he'd surprised me on more occasions than not. Even with that potty mouth of his, or maybe because of it, Jake was a big hit with Sid and Rye. He might not realize it himself, but my husband was a natural at fatherhood. Gliding my fingers over his face, I kissed him and whispered, "You're such a good man. Do you know that?" The smile that forced its way across his lips was not lost on me. It was so subtle, but I knew what to look for. "What was that?" I asked. He played dumb.
"Huh.
That smile. Why are you fake smiling?"
"I'm not faking anything," he protested. "That's the way I smile."
I stubbornly stared in his eyes, trying to get him to admit his deception. He stared back defiantly. At an impasse, I asked, "Why do you do that? Why do you doubt that you're a good person?" Surprisingly, he let the tension roll off his shoulders and answered me truthfully.
"Maybe because I'm not, Casey. Has that thought ever occurred to you?
Do you honestly believe that?" Jake regarded me a moment, behind the hair that fell over his eyes before unexpectedly sitting up.
"I don't want to do this right now. Please, just let it go."
I reached for him, but he stood up and moved away from the bed. I watched him grab for his boxers and slide them on. "I mean, everyone has done something they're not proud of, right?"
"Casey."
Jake shook his head. Clearly he was frustrated with me and couldn't seem to decide what to add to his sentence, so he just stopped at my name. And now I had a choice. Keep pushing for an answer and watch him walk away, or give up on bedside counseling for the sake of peace. I chose the latter simply because I was cold. "Hey," I said, patting the sheets. "Come on, don't be pissed. Lie back down with me." He contemplated his options, clearly hesitant to trust my intentions. "I promise I won't bring it up. Just come back and warm me up." Jake relented and crawled back under the covers with me. Pulling him into my arms, I gently placed a kiss on the tip of his nose. A moment passed while we looked intently into each other's eyes.
"Sorry," he mumbled. "I don't know why I did that."
I traced my fingers along his chest, contemplating how I wanted to reply. "Someday, Jake. Someday you'll trust me with all your secrets." He seemed to be considering my words as his body slowly relaxed under my touch.
"Maybe someday, Case. But not today."
Chapter 19. Go Big. Kyle waited with me in the dressing room before the show. Pacing back and forth, he was making me nervous, and I wasn't even the one proposing.
"Dude, relax. Sorry, I feel like I'm going to hurl."
"Stop stressing. It's not like she'll say no."
"Really? Because I'm not so sure about that. I don't have a whole lot to offer her."
"How do you figure?" Kyle motioned toward his entire self.
"I think this speaks for itself."
Maybe a few years ago I would have agreed with his self-deprecating assessment, but Kyle was not the same lazy doofus he'd once been. Of course, what kind of brother would I be if I didn't bust his balls? And this really was the perfect opportunity.
"No one said she had taste." No, he acknowledged with a chuckle. Thankfully, Kenzie doesn't have a sophisticated palate. Yeah, well, you picked a girl who has her priorities straight. She's not after money and power.
Thank God, or I'd be screwed.
For sure. Anyway, as I was about to say, you give Kenzie something no one else can give her.
Obviously,
Kyle said, jokingly pointing towards his shaft and boys.
But I wasn't talking about sex.
Neither was I. I laughed as well. Shit, if that was the criteria, I'd be scared right now, too. Kyle flipped me off, the grin on his face dying off as he gave more thought to his impending proposal. I remembered the feeling well, and had been as nervous as my brother was now. I imagine there would be nothing quite like getting turned down by the person you want to spend the rest of your life with. Still, Kyle had nothing to worry about. Kenzie was his Casey.
What if I get out there and get so nervous that I crap my pants?
I winced at the mental picture.
You're not helping, Jake.
You'll be fine, I placated him. Just focus on her face and breathe.
Okay, yeah, you're right,
he said, dipping down into a crouched position as he took long, ragged breaths. Looking up at me, he asked,
What can I give her?
Huh?
You said I could give her something no one else could. What is it?
You make her happy, idiot. And trust me when I tell you, that's all that matters. The plot was in place, and Casey and I were its supporting characters. It actually came as a surprise to me when Kyle told me he was going with the grand romantic gesture for his proposal and not something more laid back, like laying an engagement ring in the middle of a pepperoni pizza and yelling surprise. You know the whole rallying cry, go big or go home. Well, Kyle was the guy that gladly went home and took a nice long nap once he got there. Yet here he was, ready to put himself out there in the biggest way possible, in front of a crowd of thousands. If she said no, there'd be no coming back from the humiliation. Not that it seemed like Kenzie would refuse him, given the fact that she was fully expecting a proposal out of him. 2.5 years was a long time to date without some sort of long-term commitment. At some point, women get tired of waiting, as Keith could readily tell you. Step one of the plan was to keep Kenzie away from the concert, or at least until I'd had time to prep the audience. Thankfully, talking someone's ear off was Casey's specialty, so I had complete faith in her abilities to stall Kenzie's arrival, as well as to make up some excuse why Kenzie had to be looking camera ready. A fake party immediately after the concert had been the ploy. Step two was getting the audience to do what I'd asked them to do at the exact time requested. I waited until the end of the second song to address the crowd. After going through the standard greeting, I filled them in on Kyle's proposal idea, and not only was the audience game to play along, but excitement buzzed from every corner of the stadium. After they'd participated on the television show Marooned together, Kyle and Kenzie's love story was fairly well known, so getting the crowd enthusiastic for their proposal was no issue at all. And finally, step three was getting my little brother engaged. In my opinion, there was no one more deserving of a good woman and a great life than Kyle. He was loyal to a fault. If he deemed you deserving, even if sometimes you absolutely were not, there was nothing he wouldn't do for you. I'd been on the receiving end of that devotion my whole life, so I could attest to Kyle's exceptional character. It made me happy to see that my brother had found someone who could finally turn the spotlight on him. While performing, I kept an eye out for the cue from Casey. She loved being a part of this, not because she wanted her hand in everything, but because Kenzie and Kyle meant so much to her and their love story was something we could both get behind. The go-ahead was delivered to me by way of a schoolyard chain of communication passed from one band member to the next, until my guitarist leaned over and whispered,
It's time.
I glanced toward where I knew Kyle was hiding with Sean on the opposite side of the stage. Even though I couldn't see them, I trusted that my manager would get Kyle onto the stage, even if he had to drag him out there himself. So I wrapped up the song I was performing and carried the microphone toward the front of the stage, clipping it in the stand before addressing the crowd. Lights? I called out, and like magic, the stadium went black. Seconds later, the glow from thousands of cell phone lights illuminated the darkness, and the theme song from the Blue Lagoon, a throwback to their reality show days, began to play through the speakers. A spotlight clicked on,
showcasing Kyle as he made his way to the center of the stage. Cheering him on, the crowd was electric. A second spotlight switched on, illuminating Kenzie, who appeared stunned as she stood on the sidelines with her hands clasped over her mouth and eyes opened wide. It really was a beautiful moment, until Kyle ruined it.
Kenzie, get your butt out here.
Oh, God, dude. I had so much faith in him until then. You don't start a proposal that way. But then again, maybe you did if you were Kyle, since Kenzie appeared to eat that shit up, laughing her way across the stage to meet her man. Once she arrived, the song cut out, and Kyle said to his beloved possibly the most romantic thing I think I'd ever heard.
Thanks for coming.
Again, I cringed. Kenzie laughed, and the audience responded with riotous applause. Okay, so apparently Kyle was doing things his way, and it appeared to be working. Kenzie's smile lit up the already bright stage. You're welcome. Taking her hands in his, Kyle stared deeply into her eyes, and I knew this was the moment of truth. My stomach was tied up in knots for him. Kyle wasn't just my younger brother, he was my best friend, and I wanted this to be perfect for him. So I hung on his every word, hoping he didn't mess it up, until it occurred to me that Kyle wasn't aiming for perfection. Unlike me, he'd never required it. He recognized life for what it was and lived it well. He accepted people for who they were and withheld judgment. So it made sense that a proposal from an unpretentious guy like Kyle should be no different. It wasn't going to be polished or even grammatically correct, but it was going to be heartfelt, loving, and full of humor. That was Kyle.
On paper, Kenzie, you and I are an odd pairing. You being the pasty, white, big, Bambi-eyed Northern Californian who says hello way too often, and me being the sun-kissed, devastatingly handsome Southern California boy who speaks in proper slang. But sometimes, you know, when the stars align, a girl like you gets lucky.
Finding Kyle's opening insults wildly entertaining, Kenzie's face was alive with excitement as she shook her head in amusement.
Who am I kidding? Of course I'm the lucky one. I'm actually not even sure how I managed to snag a woman like you, but I can only assume it had something to do with starvation and disease-carrying mosquitoes. I'm convinced if we'd met anywhere other than a deserted island, you would have taken a pass on me. But we didn't, and you didn't, and here we are today. I keep waiting for you to come to your senses, but thank God you never have, because you're my dream girl, Kenz. The day I woke up and realized I was in love with you was the best day of my life. There's no one I'd rather grow old with than you. Well, except Jake, but he's already taken. Anyway, you know I'm not a flashy guy and big gestures are something I leave to others, but tonight I make an exception. For you.
Kyle dropped to his knee, to a chorus of oohs and ahs from the crowd. He flipped open the ring box.
Tonight, I'm going big. Mackenzie Ann Williams, will you marry me?
She said yes. The time had come to say goodbye to the kids, and as much as I was happy to get back to normal, I was going to miss them. More than I thought I would. The thing about kids was, they didn't care who you were. In their eyes, adults were nothing more than snack bitches. And in my spoiled world, it was a refreshing change of pace. "Where's your bag?" I asked. Both the kids' luggage had been sitting at the door moments ago, and now only Riley's remained. Sydney crossed her arms. "I put it back. I'm not going." My eyes widened. "You're not?" "Nope. I'm staying with you guys." I immediately sought out Casey, who appeared just as perplexed as I was. "No, sweetie, you are going back," she said, stepping into the conversation. "You, me, Luke, and Riley are leaving for the airport in a few minutes. Go get your bag." "You're not listening," she answered stubbornly. "I'm not going."
"Me neither,"
Riley said, standing by his big sister, even though he had no idea why. Casey, Luke, and I stared at one another. No one knew how to tackle the situation, as all of us were pathetic newbies with no life skills when it came to defiant children.
"Luke, would you take Riley for a short walk? I'll text you when the car gets here."
Looking immensely relieved, Luke ducked out of the bus with a protesting Riley.
Casey addressed Sydney.
Where's this coming from? Why don't you want to go home? You have so much to look forward to. You have horseback riding camp and swim lessons and play dates.
I don't care about any of that. Sydney bowed her head, her shoulders trembling.
I don't want to go back to that house.
Your house? Casey asked, glancing back at me as if I had some explanation for Sydney's sudden emotion. I shrugged, as in the dark as her.
Mom and Dad's house,
Sydney choked out the words.
I don't like living in it anymore.
Then I understood. The memories were too much for her. The house symbolized all she'd lost. Dropping down to her level, I pulled her into my arms. Sydney shook miserably, and I could feel her heart breaking as she clung to me. I sought out Casey for help, but she too was overcome by emotion, leaning against the kitchen counter for support.
I get it, Sydney, I do, I said, speaking softly. The house is filled with memories of your mom and dad, and everywhere you go inside reminds you of them.
She nodded into my shoulder, gripping me tighter as she continued to cry. Although I'd never lost someone like she had, I knew what it felt like to go back to a home that was no longer mine. Everything looked the same, yet nothing felt familiar. I knew the lessons I'd learned from my own tragedy might be of comfort to her, but was there a way to reveal my past without scaring her? Treading lightly, I said, "When I was a little older than you, something bad happened to me, too."
"I know,"
she said, pushing back from my shoulders and wiping away her tears.
"You were kidnapped."
Although we'd never discussed it with her, I wasn't surprised that she'd heard of the kidnapping. Even though I thought of it as a secret, no one else apparently did.
Did your parents tell you that? No. Kids at school, they know you're my uncle. They've told me stuff.
My stomach knotted at just the thought of what this little girl might have heard about me.
You know, not everything people say about me is true. They said you killed someone.
She answered matter-of-factly. Okay, well, shit, that was true.
I told them you'd never do that, Sydney continued. But then they showed me some websites that also said you killed someone.
I purposely didn't seek out Casey's help this time, more out of shame than anything else. Sydney had been subjected to information she was entirely too young to know, all because she was connected to me. I could only imagine the things Grace and Quinn had heard when my story was the only thing in the news in our town for a year. This was the moment I'd always feared, and one of the main reasons why I didn't want a child of my own. There would come a time, as it had now with Sydney, that I'd have to admit to the things I'd done. Swallowing back my pride, I said, "It's true. I did kill someone, but I didn't want to." Do you know what self-defense means?
No.
It means if someone is trying to kill you, you have the right to fight back and defend yourself. That's what I did. I fought back.
And you killed him instead?
Yes. But if I hadn't fought him, Sid, I wouldn't be here with you now. She nodded her understanding, or so I thought.
He would have killed you like that girl killed my parents.
Well, yeah, but...
I wish I had been in the car with my mom and dad. I would have self-defensed like you and killed that girl, and then my parents would still be alive.
No, Sydney, that's not what I meant. It's not the same thing. The girl who killed your parents, she made a terrible mistake. She wasn't trying to kill them, though. I don't want you to spend your life angry at her and avoiding places that remind you of your parents, because if you do that, you'll grow up into a bitter, unhappy person. Tears trailed lines down her cheeks.
I don't want that.
No, and your parents wouldn't want that either. They'd want you to forgive that girl and move on. Honor your parents by living the best life possible. Sydney and I stood there staring at one another. I couldn't imagine what she was thinking. So much for the pep talk I'd hoped to have with her. Finally, she answered.
Okay, I'll go home.
And you'll smile and have a good summer?
I said I'd go home. I didn't say I'd be happy about it.
I reacted to her sass with a quirked brow, and Sid actually laughed. I hugged her tightly to me, glancing at Casey for the first time since our conversation began. She was understandably emotional, but there was also mad respect in her loving gaze.
Jake? Sydney said, stepping out of our embrace.
Yeah?
What about you? Did you forgive him?
My heart began to beat forcefully from just the memory of that last day, our final confrontation. He'd mocked me, beaten me to within an inch of my life, and when I was flat on my back with no fight left, Ray had attempted to strangle the life out of me. I was only alive today because he'd failed. What had happened to me was no accident. It was cold and calculating, perpetrated by a man who thrived on the pain of others. A person like that didn't deserve forgiveness. Sydney's rich brown eyes watched me intently, her innocence demanding a response. I could have lied. Should have, probably. But for the sake of my tortured soul, I offered her the truth. No, Sid, I haven't. And I never will.
Chapter 20. Forgiven. After bringing the kids back to Arizona, I lingered a few days at home. Just like Sydney, there were memories I hoped to recall and a person I needed to forgive. The woman who killed Darcy and Miles was barely a woman at all. 18 years old at the time of the accident, she'd also lost her life. Her family, in the throes of their own grief, had reached out to us at the time of the accident. They'd wanted to apologize, but at the time, none of us were ready to hear what they had to say. Now we were. So I made the difficult call and arranged to meet with the woman's family at a local park. Mom and Sydney had chosen to accompany me, and as we crossed the grass, the three of us locked arms in solidarity. We were in this together. Always. And what we found at the end of the path was not the family of a monster, but grieving parents of a young woman who was missed just as fiercely by her family as Miles and Darcy were by ours. Her name was Beth, and she'd only recently graduated high school. She'd been a student at the local community college at the time she'd made the decision to send the fateful text that killed not only my brother and his wife, but herself as well. She was human, and she was loved. Far from the hideous beast I'd pictured in my mind. As they spoke lovingly of their daughter, I could feel the weight lifting from me as the anger began to fade. Sydney had remained stoic throughout the short meeting. Even when Beth's parents specifically apologized to her, she hadn't uttered a word. It wasn't until we were in the car on the way home that she finally spoke. I forgive her. I returned to Jake with only 2 weeks left before the end of the tour. He would have already been done by now had he not been forced to reschedule dates that had been canceled due to our family tragedy. I was ready to go home. It had been a year of such ups and downs that we both needed a chance to just chill. After the emotional meeting in the park, where I followed Sydney's example and forgave Beth, I felt stronger and more determined than ever to reclaim the Casey I'd once been. Yes, I had bad days, but they were fewer and farther between. I poured myself back into work and spent more time around Jake's crew, joking and hanging out. Even Lassen and I had mended our rift and were on good terms once more, even though I still took the opportunity to mess with him when the opportunity arose. Most importantly, Jake and I had found our rhythm again. We were back to being a team. I hadn't realized how much I'd missed the playful banter and sexy innuendos until they returned to our marriage in full force. In a year of extremes, it was only natural to keep the trend going. "You got a minute?" I asked, sliding onto the couch next to Jake and grabbing the pillow to cradle in my arms. He muted the TV and turned his body toward me.
"What's up?"
"So, you know how since Miles' death, I've been pretty erratic with my period, and charting my ovulation was all over the place?"
"Yeah."
That one word of his was loaded. I could see by the look of concern on his face that he was guessing where this was going, and he'd be right. "Well, I haven't had my period for a while, and I thought it was just normal variation, but the thing is, I wasn't really paying much attention to my cycle because all my focus was on the kids."
"Just tell me, Casey. Are you pregnant?"
Jake didn't seem thrilled, but he wasn't upset either. If I had to describe his mood at the moment, it was decidedly neutral. I don't know, but I thought all week I'd be starting, and I didn't. When I actually counted back, I realized it's been 8 weeks since my last period. I don't know if I've ever gone more than 6 or 7 weeks without one.
Do you feel different?
No, not at all. I don't think I'm pregnant, but I also don't know why I haven't started. Anyway, I was going to ask Dom if he'd drive me to the store so I can pick up a pregnancy test. Jake pulled out his phone. Who are you calling?
Sean. We've got all day. I'm going to see if he can get you a doctor's appointment.
I don't need to see a doctor, Jake. Women have been peeing on sticks for a long time.
Right, but none of those women are my wife. We're getting you an appointment.
I relented to Jake's request, and later that afternoon we were brought in through the back door of the doctor's office and escorted into an exam room. The first thing they had me do was pee in a cup. I eyed Jake. All this pomp and circumstance could easily have been avoided. I hate to say I told you so, I said, exiting the bathroom with my brimming cup of urine. But I told you so. Going on a stick would have been so much easier, by the way. Do you have any idea how hard it is to pee within the parameters of the cup? I thought I knew where my urine stream was coming from, but I was totally off. Peed all over my hand. Although not known for biting his nails, Jake was nervously chowing down. Upon hearing of my toilet trials, the stress lines in his forehead softened. The finger was removed from his mouth, and my hubby broke out into a grin.
Maybe keep that fascinating story between the two of us, huh?
The nurse stopped in briefly to take my blood pressure before exiting with my pee cup. While waiting for the doctor to arrive, I examined the stirrups on the side of the table. How much would you pay me to put my feet in the stirrups and greet the doctor like that when he arrives? I teased.
Nothing, he said, shaking his head in amusement. I would pay you nothing.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't blink an eye anyway. Do you think he gets bored looking at vaginas all day?
I don't know, Jake said, wrapping his hands behind his head and leaning back in his chair. I wouldn't.
All day, Jake. He looks at them all day. You can't tell me that wouldn't get old after a while.
Sure, Casey, whatever you say. It would be such a bore.
I extended my leg out to playfully kick him with my bare foot, but his reactions were spot on, and he managed to scoot his chair back in the nick of time. Why'd you have to get me a male gynecologist anyway? I complained.
He was the only one I could get on such short notice.
Oh, wonderful. Male and the last gyno left on the shelf. Goody. Jake grinned, shrugging his shoulders at my remark.
I honestly didn't think it mattered.
Of course it matters. Would you want a female doctor sticking her fingers up your dick?
No, he laughed. I wouldn't want anyone doing that, male or female. Would you please just sit quietly until he gets here?
Fine, but he'd better not be hot. Jake's eyes widened in surprise, but before he could respond to my off-color statement, the doctor walked through the door, and thankfully he was aging and rather unattractive. He also cut right to the chase.
Congratulations, you're pregnant.
Chapter 21 The Ugly Truth. I let the words sink into my dense skull. Casey was pregnant. With my child. I was going to be a father. Was it hot in here? The tingling sensation that had started in my toes had worked its way through my body and was now lapping at my ears. What had I been expecting? We'd been actively trying to get pregnant, so this outcome was bound to happen at some point, yet still it was shocking. Sure, I could play dad all I wanted with my niece and nephew, but they were already fully formed human beings. Any damage that had been done could not be credited to me. But my own child? Oh man, I was going to have to mold that baby from birth. While Casey peppered the doctor with questions, I let my mind wander. Fading into a trance-like state, I stared pathetically at the poster on the wall, which showcased the female reproductive organs. At first pass, it seemed fairly straightforward. I'd seen it all, you know, from the outside. But when I really started studying the inner workings, I honestly couldn't tell you where my baby was currently chilling out inside Casey. On a side note,
Did anyone else think the diagram detailing the fallopian tubes looked like the Texas Longhorns mascot? Squinting to get a better look at the illustration, I was interrupted by the doctor.
Jake, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I had a whole buttload of them, but none I actually wanted to ask out loud. I must have made some ambiguous gesture with my head because both Casey and the doctor exchanged amused grins. Now I had to come up with something tangible to save face.
When? I asked.
How?
How?
Casey giggled.
Did you need me to explain?
I glanced back at the diagram.
Yes, actually, that might be helpful.
No, I shook my head. I meant, how old?
Haven't you been listening at all?
She asked.
Sorry, I'm a little shocked at the moment.
No worries, the doctor came to my rescue. We'll get a more accurate age assessment once your wife has the ultrasound, but from what Casey has been telling me, I suspect she might be about 2 months along.
And all I heard was, you've got 7 months to get your shit together.
Casey was beaming from ear to ear as her legs swung back and forth from the raised table like an excited child. The doctor was answering more of her questions, but like before, I wasn't listening. My focus now was solely on my wife and that look of absolute exuberance on her face. How could I not be happy? For her. I needed to get with the program, and quick. This was happening whether I was ready or not. By acting like some drugged-out lunatic, I was robbing her of this moment. Plastering a smile on my face, I grabbed Casey's hand and squeezed. Her eyes lit up, sparkling as if they'd been created from diamonds. I loved seeing her this way, and would do anything in my power and pay any price for that smile to never fade from her lips for as long as we lived. I knew what had to be done. I needed to be the man she thought she'd married. The man who'd promised her his whole heart, but so far had only given her a sliver. If only I'd had the strength required to face my issues head on, I wouldn't be standing here now, at the 11th hour, wishing for a miracle. After saying our goodbyes to the doctor, Casey hopped off the examining table, grabbed my face, and kissed me with a loud smack of her lips.
I love you so much. I can tell by your crazy eyes that you're a little freaked out, but I promise you, this is a good thing. You'll see.
Casey stripped off her gown and stood before me in her underwear and bra, her hands caressing her flat stomach.
Isn't it just incredible, Jake? Can you believe our baby is growing inside me?
There was just something so graceful about her standing there stroking the baby she had already fallen hopelessly in love with. She looked like an angel. My eyes clouded in love. I wrapped her up in my arms. You're so beautiful, Casey. We held each other for a long time before she pulled back a little and ran her fingers over the worry lines in my forehead.
You've got that face again. What's wrong?
You want the truth? Casey nodded, appearing distressed. She'd obviously learned to brace herself over the years when it came to morsels of honesty from me. She needn't have worried, though. I wasn't about to ruin this moment for her. I pointed to the diagram on the wall.
Where the hell is the womb?
Once we were back on the bus, Casey went straight to the computer to read up on all things baby, while I took a couple of Tylenol and laid down. I needed more to take the edge off, like a bottle of vodka, but I didn't want to offend Casey. It's not that I was unhappy with the news. I was just ambivalent. The struggles that lay ahead for me were tremendous. Not only was I going to have to take a trip back down memory lane, but I was also going to have to face them, the ghosts that haunted my dreams.
Can we talk?
She asked. Casey stood in the doorway and I blinked her in. She looked different than she did this morning before she told me the news. No, there was no baby pouch or telltale signs of pregnancy, but there was definitely a change to her. She was calm and serene, as if the baby she was carrying had brought her the confidence and happiness to alter her entire mindset. I envied her. Would I ever get to the same place?
What's up?
She sat on the edge of the bed and lay her hand on my leg.
I'm sorry.
For what?
Not giving you a choice? I'm so happy about this baby, but I also feel guilty because I pushed you into being a father, and I knew you were only doing this to make me happy. And now I'm ecstatically happy, and you're not.
I'm not unhappy about the baby, Case.
I'm just worried about not having enough time to fix all the things I need to fix before it comes.
There's no rush, hon. Just try to achieve perfection by Christmas.
Oh, right, I laughed. That'll totally be doable. Casey climbed over me on the bed and straddled my waist. She batted her eyes at me and used her fingers to mold a huge smile on my face.
I want to see a real smile, Jake. You're going to be somebody's daddy. Isn't that the coolest thing you've ever heard?
It is pretty cool, I conceded, smiling for real like she'd asked. Suddenly, the flirty girl was gone and Casey was peering intensely into my eyes.
All jokes aside, Jake, do what you have to do. For me, for baby, for you. Just get it done.
Casey took an impromptu nap shortly after our conversation, but sleep was impossible for me because I kept playing her words over and over again in my head. Do what you have to do. She was right. I had to pull it together. The time for excuses had expired. Taking out my phone, I clicked on my contacts, scrolling through until I found the one I was looking for. He was the last person I wanted to talk to, but the only one I really could. Staring at his number for an agonizingly long while and trying to decide what to do, I finally made my decision. The phone rang a couple of times, and I was planning on just leaving a message until he unexpectedly picked up. Hello? Hey, this is Jake McAllister. I need to talk to you. We arrived home in Los Angeles the following week, and I went to see him the same day. He stayed late for me. It had been the same when I'd visited him in the past, and just as I had before, I arrived at the empty office shrouded in a dark hoodie and shifting my eyes for potential spies. Certainly my entrance more closely resembled a drug deal rather than the therapy session I'd actually come for. The reason for my secrecy was simple. I was embarrassed. Seeking help felt like a shameful sign of weakness, not to mention the stigma attached to it all. The fact that I was seeing a therapist wasn't something I was ready to share with anyone, and if the press caught wind of it, the choice would no longer be mine. But getting caught wasn't the only reason for the discomfort I was feeling right now. The last time I'd been in this office, I'd stormed out in a fit of rage. Not only had I never gone back, but I'd also ceased all contact with the man, freezing him out completely. And now, a full year later, I was forced to return to him with my tail between my legs. Sure, I could have scouted out a new therapist, but that would have required a complete rehashing of all I'd already discussed with this guy. And believe me when I say those were not memories I wanted to relive again. For 2 months, we had painstakingly dissected both the physical and sexual abuse I'd suffered at the hands of my abductor. I'd worked through emotions I never thought possible, and even though those were the toughest conversations I'd ever had in my life, they weren't the reason for the freakout that had ended my therapy sessions.
Jake,
he said, dipping his head slightly in greeting as he reached out to shake my hand. Hey, James. We exchanged an awkward glance, or at least I did. I'd acted like a fool during our last session, and just the fact that he was seeing me now spoke to his level of professionalism. It wasn't like he'd been purposely torturing me. The guy was a therapist. Getting me to open up about my past was his job. Was it his fault that he'd unintentionally stumbled upon a landmine? Was it mine for exploding? I still remembered his shocked face when I'd shoved my chair across the room, taking out a standing lamp in the process, before storming out of the office in a state of fury.
If you'd allow me, Jake, I'd like to apologize. I tried to contact you after the session to explain to you what happened, but you blocked my calls and I had no way to get in touch with you.
Sorry about that, He held his hand up to stop me.
I'm not blaming you. What happened was my fault. I wasn't regulating our session like I should have. Your reaction was not unusual in the treatment for PTSD. When talking about traumatic memories, some individuals do experience symptom relief, but others can actually become re-traumatized by the therapy they're seeking. It's my job to monitor your reactions and tailor the intensity of exposure to those traumatic events. I failed to do that in your case. I didn't read the signs correctly, and for that, I apologize. It was the last thing I'd expected to hear from him, and my surprised reaction was not lost on James. If you give me another chance to work with you, I'll be more mindful of the signs and slow it down if